This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. Anzac Day has been and gone. Did you get up early, Barry?
No, I didn't. That's the short answer to that one.
Yep, I did wake up early and I was like, gotcha, everybody, thinking of all the Anzacis. Down in Wellington, they held their Anzac Weekend Congress. How did that go?
They had the Teams event, which was won by Blair and Liz Fisher, playing with Ashley Bark and Leon Mayer. They just narrowly got home from the Barrington team, which is the current New Zealand teams, three members of the mixed team, beating the open team, which is Ian Barrington and Graham Tufnell, Malcolm Mayer and Brian Mace.
The Wellington provincial pairs, that was won by Leon Mayer and Ashley Bark, with Mike Doeke playing with Brad Johnson. And our very own Kermit came home third. She was playing with Nigel Kearney.
Good weekend for Leon, by the sounds of it. Picked up lots of A points and a bit of money.
I'll just mention the intermediates were won by Susan Brown and Denise Barnett, and Hilda Burgess playing with Yujiao Wang.
Swiss Pairs on Sunday was won by Lysandra Zing and Tim Pan. Actually, it was quite interesting because going into the last round, Michael Weir and Hugh McGann and Bob Hurley and Jack James were fighting it out with only 0.1 between them, first and second. So they played each other and got a draw. So two pairs came with big wins in the last round. Lysandra and Tim got 17 point something, and Peter Newell and Martin Reed got 20 and got up for second. That's a bit annoying, isn't it, when you're leading and then you draw and you drop to third and fourth. But that's what Swiss Pairs is like, of course. That's what they call swiffing it.
I have heard it's the last round that matters. That's where you want that big score. Seems like it could be true.
Yeah, I don't know what you could ever do about it, but it seems like the pair that you draw in the last round has way more importance than anybody you drew in the rounds before, because the last round is the one where you want a good result. But you've still got to be close enough to be in contention, so it's not like the earlier rounds don't matter at all.
Yeah. You can't even say, oh, we're going into the last round, we're in the final, because you might not even place. It seems very harsh, our game.
What do you mean by that?
First team plays the second team, and then teams from below can come up, and you might not even place on the podium. You get bumped down.
That's right. Well, actually, Peter Newell and Martin Reed were lying 11th going into the last round, and they went within the whisker of winning the whole thing. Lysandra and Tim hadn't had such a big win, they would have come from 11th, and you wouldn't have thought it possible, would you? But they would have got up to win. As it was, they got up for second. Yeah, interesting old system.
You can never say, oh, I played the final and I ended up coming sixth. You will say, how does that work?
Why are you talking about the final, Mariana?
I don't get that. You know, like the final round, number one plays
final
two.
Round. Sorry, you keep on talking about playing in the final and I thought, well, there's no final.
And you're placed at number one.
Yeah.
And even if you lose, you're not guaranteed to place second.
It depends how close it is, of course. But, I mean, when you look at those results in the Swiss Pairs, the winner's got 84, second was 81, third was 80.7, and fourth was 80.6. It was all pretty tight up the top there. Only three VPs separating the first four pairs.
Amazing.
Did you play anywhere over the weekend? I know
no,
I didn't.
No, I didn't. I played shifting. That's what I did. Anyway, we're heading into the regionals. And are you geared all up, ready? No, you're not even going to play, are you? Because we don't have the magic number of 10 in the Waikato Bays.
There'll be no trials for the open team in the Waikato Bays, so they've said they need at least five tables to sort of run a meaningful trial. I agree with, really. I mean, if you have less than five tables, it's not a very good trial. So only one category got five tables, and that was the intermediates. The seniors nearly got there. They got four tables. I don't know what they do to try and get more. I mean, I did have a look at some of the other fields, and
have they had any improvement from last week?
No.
Blast.
Of course, the trials are nothing to do with NZ Bridge. It's the regions that run them. NZ Bridge, they don't decide the format. They don't decide anything else.
What about the regions then? Do they decide, no, we're just not going to do it?
Well, they haven't. Most of them called for entries. But if they don't get enough numbers, well, they can't really run a trial, can they?
I just don't understand why people aren't playing.
Well, people are not keen. I mean, you're not trialing yourself.
So no better. A week, seven more days down the track, the numbers aren't looking any better.
No, they're not really. They're pretty dismal. They're pretty dismal. I can understand why regions just throw their hands up in the air and say, stuff up, we're going to select. I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. If I Akine, coming up next, Peter Hollands, professional Australian bridge player who has his own website. Check it out, bridgevid.com, or look him up on YouTube, Bridge with Pete.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to talk about transfers. Transfers are a convention that are popping up everywhere at expert level bridge. And I wanted to go over why are they actually so good and some of the different scenarios and break down what are the pros and cons of transfers there. Now, to do this, what I wanted to do is just first look at the common situations where most people actually play transfers, look at what they actually achieve, and then when we look at some other situations, we can see what's actually going on. So nearly everyone plays transfers after a one no trump opening. And one of the questions I've got for you is, why do people actually play transfers over one no trump? What are the benefits of doing that? There are a few benefits. The most common one that I actually hear people say is that you get the strong hand to play it, which is definitely a benefit, but I don't actually think that's the best benefit of transfers. So the two main things that transfers will do is they'll alter which player is on lead or sort of protects one player's hand from the lead, such as getting the stronger hand to play it. But also it can generate a lot of space. You can gain quite a lot of space by using transfers. So here, let's look at a spot where partner transfers to spades. After we bid two spades, they can follow up by passing, or they could bid three spades, or they could bid four spades, or they could bid a new suit. They could bid two no, three clubs, three diamonds, three hearts, three no trumps. And all of these different bids have meanings. Whereas if you didn't play transfers, what would actually happen is if partner wanted to bid spades, the only ways that they could do it is they could bid two spades, they could bid three spades, or they could bid four spades. These are the ways that partner can actually try and show their hand here if they had spades and you weren't actually doing transfers. But by doing transfers, what you only have is you're giving up one bid, that two heart bid, but then you're guaranteeing a next bid. So you've got like this really big growth of options of what you can actually show. So rather than just three ways of bidding spades, you can now show spades in a new suit. You can show spades in a weak hand, an invitational hand, a game-going hand, a slam try hand, a hand that wants to offer no trumps as well. And you've got all this variety that you can actually do just by using this transfer. So the flow-on effect means that you have so much more space for being able to show the suits after you actually transfer. But with every convention, what you're actually doing is giving up something. And what we're doing by playing transfers is actually giving up a natural two diamond bid. And the question is, how useful is this? Well, you don't often want to just play in two diamonds and expect to be able to play there. So the cost of this is really low. For the convention, there is really high reward by gaining space. You can show so many more hands from it. And the cost of doing it's pretty low. Transfers aren't that complicated. There's lots of flow on hands that you can delve really deep and get really into the nitty gritty. But just the concept of, hey, partner, I'm showing the suit above, isn't actually that complicated. The other benefit of transfers is that it gets to help guide who's going to be on lead or gets the stronger hand to lead. Now, it's not the case that the stronger hand is always the person that wants to have the lead come round to them. Here is an example of a good hand where the one no trump bidder really wants to beat the declarer. And what it is because you've got all these tennises where you've got like all these finesse positions, if the opponents lead a spade, it'll go into your ace queen. If they lead a heart, it's up to your king jack. Club, it's into your ace queen. Diamonds, it's not so great for you to lead, but there's three suits where it's really beneficial for the lead to be coming up to the strong hand because it wouldn't matter where the missing honor was. You're going to be able to play last and you're going to capitalize on this. And this is why it's often good to get the strong hand to play it. But it's not that it's always good for the strong hand to play it. So I'll bring up another hand. Here's another strong no trump hand that has four aces. This is one where it's probably not beneficial for the strong hand to actually be declaring it at all. Your partner is the one with lots of the finesse positions where you'd usually want their honors to be last to play. You'd want the cards to be running around to them. Now, here, transfers are probably detrimental. If you could get your partner to play, it's probably better than you actually playing it. So it's not always the stronger hand that's doing it. It's really the types of suits that you've got that you want the lead coming up to it. There is another benefit of the stronger hand playing it, which is sort of when you're defending, the more unknown cards there are, it's a bit harder to defend. But there's a counter to that, which is also guessing what someone's shape is also really difficult. It's hard to guide. Is it more important to hide the stronger hand so the defense have met more guesses about where the high cards are? Or is it more important to hide the distributional hand? Because imagine partner is pretty weak, but like a 6-4 shape, the opponents might not know which suits to try and cash out or which to attack. So there's a bit of a balancing act of which hand you can actually see. The main things that transfers gain are that space. There are so many more bids available after you use a transfer, but you are giving up a suit that you can't show. And then also you get the stronger hand to play it in this common spot, but you're ultimately affecting who's on lead and who's being led up to. So let's look at a few different other situations where transfers are sort of popping up in expert level bridge. One that's growing in popularity is transfers after one club. So after a one club opening, some partnerships are starting to experiment with transfers where one diamond would show hearts and one heart would show spades. What this can do is it now gives the flow-on effect that the opener has a couple of ways of continuing. Here they could reject the transfer and just bid something new, or they could accept the transfer at the one level, or they could just jump and accept the transfer, so forth, or they could just bid a new suit. So they're the options that the opener sort of has after it. Now, this transfer here, if you're playing transfers over one club, would typically just be saying, I've got like a normal one heart response. So four or more hearts, not the five cards that you would usually have for transferring over a no trump. And there's a couple of schools of thoughts that people transferring will use. Some people use accepting the transfer to show exactly three cards. And what this means is if the auction gets competitive, you'll know straight away, do you actually have a 5-3 fit or not? And you can go on there. Another way that people use transfers over a club is they use accepting the transfer to be like a weak no trump. And if you instead bid one no trump, this would be your 18-19 balance. So you can separate out your no trump ranges, whether you accept the transfer or if you bid no trumps. And both of these, you can see how you've gained space and gotten a edge there. Also, what we've done is we've changed who's on lead. And transfers over one club, this is probably one where affecting the lead's hard to gauge if this is beneficial or not. Because if the opener is just a minimum opener, often the points will be relatively evenly split. And you don't know if you want the lead coming up to the opener or if you want it coming up to the responder. Now, if you're going to stop in a part score, the opener will often be the stronger hand. But if you're going for game, it's less clear have you actually gained anything by switching sides of who's going to lead. The benefit of the lead protection sort of drops down here. But you have gained space and you can solve the problem of either finding the 5-3 fit or either the problem of separating out the 18-19 balanced.
Join us next week as Pete concludes his thoughts on using transfers. After the regionals, what's your next tournament going to be?
We've got a local tournament here in Hamilton that I'm going to play in during the week on the 13th of May. If you want to come and play in Hamilton on the 13th of May, there's an 8B tournament being held. I don't know why they've called it a multi-grade tournament. It's just an open tournament. Anybody can play in it. It's just a peers tournament. The Hamilton Craigs Investments Peers. So I'm also playing in the Matariki Open Swiss Peers, which is going to be online on the 20th of June. Know when to fold up, know when to walk away. So, tip for you that nobody should need. Now, it's mostly for the people that are playing a strong no trump, a little bit for the people playing a weak no trump. If you open a suit at the one level and your partner responds at the one level and one of the opponents overcalled two of a suit, so say you've opened a club, your partner's bid a spade and the hand on your right has overcalled two hearts and you rebid two no trumps. How many points do you think that shows?
Playing a weak or a strong no trump opening?
Well, okay, both of them. You're playing a strong no trump, you open a club, partner bids a spade and they bid two hearts on your right. How much do you need to bid two no trumps?
Well, I would
it's
have
not
thought
a trick
that,
question, honestly.
I would have thought you on that one you would have a minimum of 12
so
if you opened a strong
put
one.
It this way, your partner has only shown 6 points
when
they
see.
Bid one spade.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's
for
right.
you to bid two no trumps with 12 points is
Yeah.
bordering on insanity. And yeah, a lot of people do
19.
It. So that's good that you said that. But I mean, so if they hadn't have overcalled two hearts on your right and it had gone one club, one spade, were you going to rebid two no trumps on your 12 to 14?
Yeah.
Of course you weren't.
No.
And there is
That's
no
right.
reason why you should do it now. If you've only got 12 to 14, you can happily pass.
That's right. Yeah. So you'd have to have 18.
Your partner's
14.
heard you open and they've got another bid. If they've got more than 6 points, you know, if they've got something better, you'll hear from them. It's quite surprising the number of people that rebid no trumps there on 12 to 14 and they're opposite six and here they are in two no trumps. If it goes one club from you and one spade from your partner and you jump to two no trumps, how many points do you think that shows with
That's
no overcall?
18/19, a poor 19.
19. Yep, that's right. So when it goes one club, one spade, two hearts, two no trumps from you, still shows 18
Still
to 19.
sure.
Well, in fact, it's probably even more important for you to have 18 to 19 because not only are they bidding, they're going to get a heart lead or whatever it was they bid. So you do need 18 to 19 and you need some good hearts. That's an interesting one. But even if you're playing Ekol and you open at the one level, one club and they go one spade and they bid two hearts and you bid two no trumps here, how many points do we think we're showing?
It's the same, 18, 19.
It should show 18 to 19. There's probably even more people that would rebid there with 15 to 17. I guess you're not quite as much in the cactus as you are when you've only got 12 to 14, but it's close to it. If partner's only got 6 points and you've got 15, you're probably not going to make two no trumps.
That's right, yeah.
You can either pass or you could make a takeout double.
Yep.
But with 15 to 17, you probably, there's nothing wrong with passing. If partner's got any points, they've heard you open, you'll hear from them again. There's my tip. Don't get bullied into bidding two no trumps just because the opponent on your right bid something.
Whoa, here he comes again. That's the thing. Who's that with? Ethel? Is that you, Ethel? Where do you think you're going? On his anatomy.
You
get your clothes
on. You know, people tap, tap, tap with their pen while they're thinking of what to bid next. Is that giving information? When they're doing that, and let's say they pass, what do you reckon?
The tapping of the pen hasn't said anything. It's
yeah.
just the length of time that they took to pass, really, isn't it? Whether they tapped the pen or not make no difference. If they sat there for 5 minutes and didn't tap the pen, it's giving just as much information away as if they did. I guess when you hesitate for a long time and pass, you do put some extra pressure on partner because partner's now got to... I think the wording of the rule is something like not choose from logical alternatives, one that could have been suggested by partner's hesitation. But, I mean, it's a thinking game and you're allowed to think. And you've got to be aware that if you think for a long time and then you pass in any situation, you put an awful lot of pressure on your partner because they're not allowed to know that you had something to think about and that you're close to having a bid. They're not allowed to know that. And they cannot bid, you know, if they've got a marginal bid where they might have bid and they might not, they may not be allowed to make it if it could have been suggested, you know, that it's a bit safer that you've obviously got something because you were going to bid. We don't have them anymore, but the stop cards did have some benefits, and that was one of them. When it went three hearts and you had something to think about, and the stop card went out and you had 10 seconds, and then you could think about it, and then you could pass smoothly at the end of it without giving away the information. Nowadays, it goes three hearts, there you are on the spot. If you've got something to think about, it's awkward at the end of it, and then you pass, and then everybody knows that you needed to think.
To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
We're back with the bailiff this week. we've got a funny type question for him. So funny, Barry, you can do it.
Okay. Let's do with the play of the cards. And while we were discussing something else with the bailiff off air, just talking about how sometimes if you are out of a suit and you sort of don't want the clearer to notice, that you try the old chestnut of playing a card of the same colour, hoping the clearer won't notice that you're out. Is that okay to do that, or is that considered to be not quite kosher?
I mean, you're playing a legal card. Now, it would be unethical or at very least sharp practice if you tried to turn it over quickly in the hope to increase your chances of the clearer not noticing. But if you played it in the same way as you played other cards and just chose to play a diamond when you're discarding on hearts, there's nothing wrong with that. Really, it's only a matter of which card you choose. You shouldn't vary the way you play it. For instance, you shouldn't play a card in an exaggerated manner when it's singleton or something. Or after you're out of a suit and your partner's on lead, you shouldn't rearrange your hand to make it red-black. If it gave partner a clue that you're out of a suit and they gave you a rough, then you'd be passing information, not with the bids that you make or the cards that you play, but with something else. It's like when you're using written bidding, writing extra big or putting a full stop after it on the bidding pad. It's doing something else. It's making the bid or playing the card in a different way. And while we're not robots, you're obviously, you can't replicate exactly how you play a card each time. But if you play one in an exaggerated manner, or if you turn it over quickly so that you hope the clearer doesn't notice it, you're doing something different. So that wouldn't be legal.
Anything out of temper, like we've all seen people throw a card down on their table and discuss when their partner's failed to give them a rough. or maybe that can happen. But I mean, you've been directing since about, I don't know, 1967 or something. I mean, how often do you get called for something like that? When would something happen to anybody?
Well, look, it's rare to get called for something like that. I can't recall the last one. But you see, your example of throwing a card down and discussed when partner doesn't give you a rough, it shouldn't happen. But it probably isn't going to be a problem. It's only going to be a problem if partner gets back on lead and then gives you a rough the next time. That would be a problem.
So
okay,
if you have a problem like that and dummy sees it and declare it doesn't, can I call and say, rah, 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 rah?
So dummy can only call the director during the play if it's an issue that somebody else has already pointed out. For instance, let's say there's been a lead out of turn by a defender and somebody else points it out and then everyone over is, what do we do now? Dummy can call the director about an infraction that somebody else has pointed out. Dummy can't initiate a call for the director about something that hasn't been pointed out yet. Now, they can always call at the end of a hand. So two things. First is the one we're talking about where there was someone played a card in an exaggerated manner or something and their partner thought they managed to give them a rough or something. If dummy thought there was a problem with that, waits to the end of the hand and then says, look, that was a bit funny the way you played that card and then your partner gave you a rough. I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to call the director just so we can find out whether that was okay or not. So dummy can bring that up at the end of the hand, right? The one where dummy often steps in and causes me a problem is when they point out a lead out of turn. So let's say declarer south and west is on lead, but trick four or something, but east leads. If dummy's the one that jumps up and says, oh, it's not your lead.
Yeah.
Well, you see, I don't know. Would declarer have spotted that it was a lead out of turn? So I always say, well, if declarer had spotted that and said something, we would treat it as a lead out of turn. But dummy's not allowed to point it out, and I can't allow you to profit from dummy deliberately breaking the rules. So we'll treat it as though maybe your partner wouldn't have noticed, and that will be the lead, and we'll carry on from there.
Oh, okay.
Dummy does not have many rights. Dummy can prevent their partner from leading from the wrong hand. So if their partner goes to lead from dummy or goes to lead from their own hand, they say, no, you're in the other hand, so they can prevent that. And they can point out to their partner that they've got the current trick pointed the wrong way, but they can't point out a previous trick pointed the wrong way. So if you're on trick five and declare a place the wrong way, you can say, oh, you just placed that the wrong way.
Yeah.
But you can't say, oh, you've got the first trick the wrong way around, right? You can't go deal with that, right? So dummy, I'm afraid, does not have many rights.
I don't know. Can they ask partner how they like their coffee?
Well, yes, but no one's ever complained about that.
Okay.
Pedro, why can't they tell declarer about that trick that they've turned the wrong way before?
Because that's what's in the laws. You can only prevent your partner from making a mistake. You can't point out something that happened previously.
Right. Yeah.
Why? That's just as well. Imagine if you're allowed to remind partner of all the mistakes they'd made on the previous five tricks.
Oh, yeah.
You could be there all day.
And that's one of the ideas, is that dummies shouldn't be interfering in the play. You don't want everyone to get distracted because dummies in there saying, oh, you should do this or you should do that. Right?
I can see Barry doing that.
I guess there's a reason they're called dummy. Well, at least it's better than the French. You know what dummy is called in French?
No.
What?
It's l'amour.
Oh, yeah,
the dead one. If only. Okay. Well, that was enlightening, Patrick. Thank you for that.
All right. We'll catch you next week.
We'll see if we can get a few language responses from Judge Julie next week, maybe. Which ones is she most proficient in, do you think?
I don't know. She was learning Spanish before we went to Buenos Aires, which is not a forte of mine, but she didn't actually use it much when we got there, really. So I don't know whether she'll give you anything in Spanish. I couldn't tell you what dummy is in Spanish.
Okay, thank you for that.
All right, bye.
See you, Patrick.
Awesome, yeah.
All right, folks, that's about it from us. If you've got bridge this weekend, good luck.
Or in fact, this week, if you're playing at the club this week, let's hope that you go well.
Absolutely.
I'm playing for free on a Wednesday night at the moment, Mariana. Did you know that?
How do you get to play for free?
Oh, that's because I'm such a good person.
Are you filling in? Are you?
No. The Yakarana Bridge Club is having free bridge online on Wednesday nights at 7:30. All of April and May. Free ad for Akarana Bridge Club. There you go, guys. Free to play, and you can just show up and play for nothing online. So it doesn't matter if you're in Invercargill to Kerikeri, you can go in and play, and it will cost you nothing.
Wow.
Very generous on behalf of the Akarana Bridge Club.
Yeah, just do it, people. We shall catch you next week.
Bye for now.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.